So, greetings, friends. Today's talk is on contentment and gratitude in Dhamma practice. As Dhamma practice develops, as our minds become more well concentrated, it's a reflection of that developing the path that begins to develop contentment in our practice, and that's simply a reflection of the contentment that's developing in our lives. As this contentment develops, it overcomes the common hindrances to practice that the Buddha described over 2,600 years ago as the ongoing need for sensual desire, for ill will, laziness or drowsiness, discontent and doubt, and that's reflected in all areas of our life. The contentment that develops directly through the Dhamma practice comes from understanding the nature of life in the world. An accurate description of discontent is struggling with yourself and the events of your life. So as we develop an understanding of who we are in relation to the world that we live in, and really a profound understanding of this, of the interaction between the self and the impermanent nature of all things, we cease fighting our wrong views, and we cease fighting the way that the world is prone to unfold. When the Buddha described, well, let me put it this way, the profound contentment is developed by understanding and integrating the Four Noble Truths. The First Noble Truth states that there is dukkha in the world. Dukkha arises as a consequence of living in the world, and then is that stress is exacerbated by reacting to that and wanting the common stresses in the world to be different than that is. So the Buddha described dukkha, described stress, described the general unsatisfactory nature of life in very simple and direct terms. He stated that birth is stressful, meaning that simply having a human life is stressful. He then said that sickness is stressful, aging is stressful, and death is stressful. He went on to say that not getting what is desired is stressful, and receiving what is undesired is stressful. And then he would always conclude that description by saying, in short, the five clinging aggregates are stressful, or dukkha. The five clinging aggregates simply describe the ongoing personal experience of stress in the world. So what the Buddha is describing there is almost so simple that it is ignored. And it's ignored for many reasons. One is that we don't want to acknowledge the natural stressors in life. So we create very intricate strategies to continue to ignore what is naturally occurring as a consequence of having a human life. That strategies that we create to ignore are strategies that ignore this initial ignorance of Four Noble Truths. So the Buddha recognized that it is this profound need for a self-referential ego self to ignore its own ignorance that leads to all manner of suffering, meaning it leads to all manner of discontent with ourselves in relation to the world. And that often results in feeling that we're inadequate or unable to control the things that are happening in the world. And sometimes it relates to ourselves personally. We feel that we're not even able to control ourselves. The Buddha describes that type of discontent as rooted in craving for and clinging to experiences. And initially, it's the craving for the establishment of a permanent self that is able to manage or in some way be free of stress that leads to ongoing discontent and ongoing suffering. Another way of saying that is the craving originates suffering by attempting to establish a self rooted in a misunderstanding of Four Noble Truths and attempting to create a permanent self in an environment that is always changing, always impermanent. And so you can clearly see that there's inherent stress in attempting to do something that is simply impossible to do. It can't be done. Then once those ideas and views of who we are in relation to the world are formed, because we're the ones that created them, we're self-created in doing this, that we now cling to that because it is a hardened belief, though rooted in ignorance, that what we've created is who we are. That's the essence of anatta. The Buddha used the word anatta to simply mean that the views that we've created of a self are not a self. Let go of the views. They're wrong views rooted in ignorance. He then described that this process that we as individuals initiated due to our own ignorance is possible to recognize and abandon. And this is the primary reason why he taught an Eightfold Path. The first factor of the Eightfold Path is right view, and that implies that there's something that can be recognized as a wrong view or a view rooted in ignorance. That's the entry point into the Eightfold Path. It opens the door by simply accepting that the views that I'm currently holding about myself in relation to the world don't seem to be working very well. They're leading to stress. They're leading to confusion. It leads to a feeling of not understanding what's occurring in the world, or maybe not understanding why things are occurring in the world or why we are reacting in certain ways. That's all, let me put it this way, that's all, when we can see that and accept that, that can be the entry point into looking at something different, meaning engaging with the Eightfold Path. So being stuck in wrong views, being stuck in views that are ignorant of the way things are, naturally leads to an ongoing and often subtle feeling of discontent. Things just don't seem right, or we seem like we need to have something else occurring or something else in our lives in order for our lives to be fulfilling. In extreme cases, that can run, that can develop into extreme compulsive behaviors such as addictions or ongoing compulsive behavior that we get stuck in. It can cause us to seek out relationships to solve our own problems or to relieve our own feelings of unhappiness in our life. And of course, that leads to simply more clinging. So the third noble truth is that cessation of this process is possible, meaning it's possible to recognize and abandon the causes and our individual contributions to our discontent. And that's why the Buddha taught an Eightfold Path, to recognize and abandon this general, but again, often subtle feeling of discontent or unsatisfactoriness in life. So another word for discontent, of course, would be dukkha or would be stress. So as we develop the Eightfold Path, beginning in right view, that simply meaning that in this moment, I don't know everything that there is to know in the world, and maybe there's another way of looking at the world, points directly to right intention. So the second noble truth is that this craving rooted in ignorance originates stress and clinging to these views and self-identities that we create as a result of that ignorance maintain stress. So then right intention is the intention to recognize our own discontent, where it's rooted in, and abandon those causes. And then the rest of the path develops that understanding to a deep and profound level so that we can actually accomplish that task of recognizing and abandoning our own discontent. So right speech, right action, and right livelihood, the virtuous factors of the path, when we are mindful of those factors and mindful of the unskillful or the aspects of wrong speech, wrong action, and wrong livelihood. When we're able to be mindful of those factors, we're able to recognize the cause of our own discontent, our own stress, our own dukkha, and simply abandon them. There's no analysis that needs to get involved in this. We don't need to find out where they came from, who's to blame, or any of that external focus on our discontent. the Buddha teaches that the cause of our discontent is ignorance. So ignorance is not something that we can abandon in any external way. It has to be recognized as something that we have created ourselves, and simply abandon it. That's the development of wisdom. So by being mindful of the virtuous factors of the path, we're able to recognize the manifestations of our own ignorance. And as they manifest, as we're able to see them, we simply abandon them. And that leads to the last three factors of the path, of right effort, right mindfulness, and right meditation or right concentration, the concentration factors of the path. It is necessary let me put it a different way. A mind that is rooted in ignorance is constantly distracted, and that's a very convenient way of a mind rooted in ignorance to continue to ignore its own ignorance. It creates these very intricate strategies to continue that ignorance and insist on being constantly engaged in the outer world, and taking the world in a very personal way to continue that distraction. Distraction is the most powerful way that an ignorant mind uses to continue its own ignorance. And you can look at the endless ways that we use to continue and to distract our minds. So the antidote to a distracted mind is obviously a well-concentrated mind. That's the reason why the Buddha taught meditation. He taught meditation not as an escape from suffering, because that's just another distraction, but as a way of deepening our concentration so that we could hold in mind the refined mindfulness of all factors of the Eightfold Path. And in doing so, we're able to recognize the cause of our own discontent and simply abandon those causes. And this leads to the other part of this theme for today's talk, is gratitude, or simply recognizing how fortunate we are to have a simple and direct path that we know works. If we truly understand taking refuge in the Buddha, his Dhamma, and a well-focused Sangha, we understand it works because a human being actually did this. He was able to recognize and abandon the cause of his own discontent and developed a way that all human beings could do the same, his Dhamma. And then if we're fortunate enough to have be a part of a well-focused Sangha, we have all three aspects of the precious jewels, the three jewels of the Dhamma, in place in our lives. And as we deepen this, we deepen our contentment with ourselves in relation to the world, our gratitude naturally increases because we realize how fortunate we are to have come across something that we can use in a direct way, meaning without any outside influence necessary. It's not a matter of developing some merit or grace from outside sources. It's entirely due to our own right efforts that we're able to develop a mind of lasting peace and happiness, and a mind that is constantly content with what's occurring. So that's a pretty important word, and a powerful word when it's really understood. Because a mind that is content is a mind that's at peace. It's a mind that has ceased struggling with any wrong views of itself in relation to the world, and has developed a radical acceptance of life as life occurs. So that's the end of my talk for today. I hope you found some benefit to it. And if you have, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Beginning next week, my talks are going to be a little bit different than they have in the past, at least occasionally, in that they're going to be somewhat based on questions that have arisen during my classes, whether it's in Frenchtown or online, and our discussions that have followed. And I'll still be teaching to suttas too on the Wednesday podcast, but by and large, I intend them to be more of a response and more of a contemporaneous talk on what's occurring within the Sangha in Frenchtown and the online Sangha. So again, thank you for joining me today. Have a wonderful day. Peace. Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions,
Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.